him a moment of concentration to synchronize his control of Madra and Aura together, but he dismantles the technique. Before the forged axe blades reach him, they dissolve into essence. He is displeased. With his skill in soulsmithing, he should be able to separate Madra much more quickly than this. The prisoner tosses his axe to the ground and drops onto his heels. "Kill me," the man says through a raspy throat. Osmanthus gives him a razor-edged smile. "You tried to kill me. You put my children in danger. Why should I show you mercy? Your death would have been clean. What a comfort that is to me." Osmanthus began a forger technique of his own, and shimmering black stars hung in the air over his prisoner's head, the Hollow King's crown. "Cycle," he ordered. "Restore your Madra. Give me practice, and then I will give you mercy." The memory skipped ahead after that, and he demonstrated his dismantling technique twice more, once on the prisoner's striker technique, and then again on the man's remnant. Linden committed it to memory, and Dross assured him that with some alterations, they should be able to develop a version of it themselves. Linden suspected he might actually be better at it than Osmanthus Aurelius had been, at least at the point that dream tablet was recorded. He had three compatible Madra types that could be used to take apart the techniques of others, and pure Madra was better at taking apart spiritual energy than destruction Madra was. But despite the gains he had made through the memory, he was left with a sick feeling. The man had an arrogance that permeated his every thought. He was the best, and he knew it. The prisoner really had tried to assassinate him, so Linden didn't feel much pity for him, but neither was he comfortable with the Aurelius Patriarch's callous disregard. Athan turned to him, having noticed that Linden had finished. He didn't say anything, but Linden got the impression he was waiting. "I didn't realize the path of the Hollow King was a destruction path," Linden said. That was the safest topic. "It was less difficult than you might think to adapt it to pure Madra. Many of the lesser aspects and fundamental principles were complementary." "Apologies, but why bother?" Pure Madra had its advantages. Linden was proof enough of that. But Athan would have had a far easier time training a destruction path. At least destruction aura existed. Athan busied himself with his clothes, not meeting Linden's eyes. "No offense intended to the path of black flame, but I found myself less than comfortable with destruction Madra. I have seen the Patriarch's memories myself. His experiences were enough to cause me to develop a distaste." Linden could understand that, and he didn't comment further. Zeal peered down the sloping hallway. "Don't bother hurrying, but the enemy is building up strength." The tunnel had already been sealed off by three layers of his scripts. This time, the runes were etched onto plates that he'd stuck to the walls, floor, and ceiling of the hall rather than forging them in midair. The script should be less brittle this way. The first row was powered by Athan's pure Madra, the second by Yeren, and the third by Zeal himself.
"Does anyone else find it alarming that we haven't been attacked by the hunger spirits in a while?"
Mercy piped up. Linden was examining the display next to the tablet he'd just read. He couldn't tell what had once sat there. He suspected a table and chair, perhaps a book of some kind. He spoke as he investigated.
"If Subject One can't reach us here, we should use the time wisely. The value of these memories is... I don't have words for it."
Yeren pulled a hand back from a tablet nearby, next to a series of six triangular imprints in a stone. She looked startled.
"Linden, you... I don't... Bleed me, take a look at this."
He hurried over and immersed himself in another memory.
Osmanthus's black hammer cracked against the gleaming chunk of winter steel. He poured his Madra into it, his soul fire, and his desperate wish for destruction. His hammer amplified his wish, focusing his will, forming the metal into a perfect tool of elimination. He could atone for the ruin he brought only by causing more, because that was all he could do. This arrowhead would be his apology for what he'd already done, his atonement, his penance.
Lyndon snapped out of the memory, dragging himself out of an ocean of despair. This memory felt much later than the others, and carried sadness like Osmanthus had just watched his entire world collapse. From the context of the memory, he knew what had been enshrined here. Not penance, the prize that the Abaddon had gifted to Yeren. The prototypes, the failures. Osmanthus had tried many times to complete his penance, to leave behind a perfect weapon to repay those he'd failed. But while these weapons might have all graced a monarch's armory, he had never succeeded. He'd kept them here in the hopes that another soulsmith might complete his work. Eventually, he would succeed, but clearly sometime after he'd left this room for the last time.
"Long odds that we'd stumble on the place penance was made," Yeren said.
She was frowning at the spaces in the wall where the arrowheads had once been kept. Aethon stood by her, looking on them as well.
"Not as coincidental as you might think. He spent many years on that project. Similar failures were once kept beneath House Aurelius and in Black Flame City, though they were all used long ago. Anywhere you find his works, you are likely to find an attempt at penance."
"He was a master of destruction, Madra," Orthos said from across the room. "Some of these techniques could teach us more about Black Flame."
Lyndon realized Little Blue was missing from his shoulder, and she and Orthos had found a dream tablet that even they could view. Zeal firmed his two-handed grip on his hammer.
"I like learning from my predecessors more than most, but I prefer to do it when we have more time."
Lyndon glanced over to the commotion in the hallway that he'd been ignoring. A forger technique from the Tomb Hydras was actively clashing against Aethon's layer of scripts. Forged glowing fangs snapped at a barrier of blue-white madra, which flashed into existence every time they attacked. There were half a dozen sets of jaws attacking, and as Lyndon watched, another joined them. The barrier was going to fall soon.
"Can we pry out the dream tablets?" Lyndon asked.
It would be a real tragedy if they couldn't milk this room for everything it was worth.
"Not unless we can break the walls," Aethon responded.
Once again, Lyndon suspected he could do that, but it would cost him, and he certainly wasn't willing to flagrantly spend energy and attention with a powerful enemy in the next room. He sighed. It seemed they really did have to take care of this enemy first.
"Oh, this one," Mercy said excitedly. "Look at this one."
She pointed to a shimmering purple gem embedded under a set of lines that had once been etched into the stone, but time had wiped away. Lyndon flicked through it, but it wasn't as cohesive a memory as the others. It was just a series of impressions, thoughts that Osmanthus had meant to pass on. Once, it had been a map of the labyrinth.
"Dross,
I have compiled the information, but much of the memory is faded, as this environment lacks a way to replenish dream aura."
Any information was better than none, and as the labyrinth shifted seemingly at will, a map was more like an understanding of the patterns that governed its changes rather than a physical layout. But there was one thing that stood out even more to Lyndon. The wall showed an X scratched into the bottom of what had once been a diagram of the labyrinth. It marked the lowest room. Osmanthus's exact warnings and instructions had faded over the years, but his emotions remained. He urged those that would come behind him to make their way to that room. That was where he had left a test, and a prize for any who proved themselves worthy.
"Aethon, I think..."
Aethon heaved a heavy sigh at Lyndon's excitement.
"What you're thinking is correct. I formed my reputation with Tiberian on my insight into the first patriarch's memories, so I understand him better than anyone still alive. He left a soulsmith inheritance here."
Lyndon's heart raced.
"Not his complete inheritance, you understand," Aethon hurried to assure him. "He left this one behind long before he ascended, but it is still the legacy of a soulsmith without peer. If you can win its approval, it would be invaluable."
Lyndon clenched his fists. This was what he'd been waiting for. The outer layer of scripts shattered, and Lyndon finally turned toward it with impatience. This was an opponent that deserved his full attention, but it would be tragic if he couldn't find his way back to this room. Still, he was filled with renewed motivation to proceed.
It's death, Madra. Can we get rid of it from here?
Not with the aura as weak as it is, Zeal put in. Ruler techniques would be best for such a big target.
Linden nodded. Mentally, he went over the constructs and dead matter he had prepared. How could they clear this with the least expense?
This is going to cost us, he finally said.
We'll try to spread it out. He was cut off by a roar that shook the entire labyrinth and a flare of spiritual energy. The forger techniques, pushing against their defensive scripts, vanished. Everyone readied weapons.
Here it comes!
Yeren shouted. But nothing did. After a moment of waiting, everyone turned to Aethon. He closed his eyes and extended his awareness.
It's tricky to get much here, he murmured. But I don't think its attention is...
Aethon trailed off, and his jaw hung open for a moment. Then his eyes snapped open.
Run, he ordered. Linden, we need a hole in the wall, right here.
He pressed his hand against the wall in the opposite direction of the tomb hydras. Linden didn't ask any questions. If Aethon was talking like this, that meant the time for saving resources had passed. He focused everything he had into Black Dragon's breath. Soulfire bathed the technique, and it fused easily with the authority of the Void Sage. A black bar of liquid flame, containing distant sparks of red flame, warped the world as it struck at the stone of the labyrinth. Linden felt another will opposing his, but his technique won out. He began carving through the protected stone. The edges glowed red hot, but there was no molten stone. It had been erased by destruction. Behind him, even without focusing his perception, he could feel a presence clashing against the Death Madra. He couldn't make out its properties exactly. It was like a team of sacred artists of all different paths had joined forces. Aethon was still barking orders.
Yeren, guard the tunnel. Zeal, we need veiling scripts now. Mercy, put the Dream of Darkness past the scripts. Orthos, help Linden with the wall.
Drilling through the wall like this was far harder than cutting through ordinary stone, but Linden had almost carved the outline of a human in the stone. Then webs of hunger madra shot from every direction. Everyone had to dodge. His striker technique was disrupted, and everyone's techniques were interrupted. Linden and Aethon unleashed waves of pure madra. Linden a little slower, as he'd been forced to switch from his black flame core. These strands of hunger were more difficult to disrupt than any they'd faced so far. They pushed through the hollow domain, carrying a stronger will before Aethon eradicated them with concentrated striker techniques.
Too late,
Yeren said, and then Linden felt what she had a moment later. An overwhelming presence had been unveiled, and it felt like the twisting of space. The Death Madra swelled to meet it and was battered back, then torn apart. They heard the tearing of meat echo down the hallway, followed by a deafening silence. And all of them knew who was coming. Regan Shen.
Chapter 14. Iteration 001. Sanctum. On Suriel's screen, Gadrael hovered in the middle of space. A translucent blue wall of force intercepted a planet-obliterating strike without so much as trembling.
Did Machiel agree with this course of action? Gadrael asked.
The Titan was a small but athletic man, made of muscle, with blue-gray skin and short horns like swept-back hair. He had perfected his body as he ascended, as virtually everyone did, and among his people his form was considered ideal beauty. Suriel wondered how they would see him with a broken nose. Not that she could break his nose. Not only was he an infinite distance away, but his cartilage was sturdier than most planets. She could dream, though.
Machiel is still in treatment, she told him.
Again.
His mind is occupied with potential outcomes, and he cannot be distracted from his management of fate.
Contact me again when you have his approval.
Gadrael turned, presenting her with the back of his smooth white armor, and readied the buckler on his arm. A vast cloud of black smoke billowed against his barrier, and the wall of order slowly began to dissolve. Gadrael swept a hand and his barrier vanished. The smoke boiled forward, suddenly unhindered, and Suriel could sense the appetite and corrosive influence it carried. Enough to swallow 100 planets.
The mundane buckler expanded in an instant, and Gadriel was holding the shield of the Titan. It was a bulwark of gleaming steel, wide enough to shelter his entire body, and it crawled with red-hot veins like molten metal. She heard a distant roar as its powers activated. The black smoke crashed over Gadriel in a wave, and her connection to him faded to nothing. Suriel's hands curled into fists as she stared into her blank wall, and her presence had to restrict her strength before she crushed everything in her building with the force of her irritation. With every passing day, worry ate away at her soul. Not worry for Gadriel. He was the closest thing to invincible, and anyone standing behind him was as safe as they could be. But he would plant himself like a fortress wall in front of someone, declare them under his protection, and never consider whether there was someone else who might need him more. He relied entirely on Machiel to direct him effectively. Machiel the Hound, who had refused to lend his support to Suriel's efforts. She'd fail, he said. She had a far greater likelihood of success by waiting for the Vroshir to leave, as her presence had told her. Suriel couldn't accept that. She had contacted every single one of the other 6 judges, and they had all, in their own ways, turned her down. They would be delighted to accept her help, but provide their help to a risky venture when they didn't need to? Why? Their worlds weren't under threat. Suriel was starting to see why Osriel had left.
You always knew why Osriel left, her presence said. He was abundantly clear about his frustrations with the court.
She held her hand over her eyes, wondering if she should make herself sleep. Sleep was nothing but a luxury for her now, but it sounded amazing. She wouldn't, of course. There was too much to do.
I thought that when things were dire enough, they would change. That was never likely. What haven't we tried? Giving up? Other than that.
She downed another cup of tea. It really was good. It had been Osriel's favorite. Her presence tapped into the power of her residence and teleported another dose of steaming tea into her cup.
How high of a priority is this request?
That was an unusual question. Suriel almost responded that it was the highest priority, but her presence literally lived inside her mind. There was a reason why it had asked. So she gave the question a moment of thought. She could point out the number of lives at stake, but that was just as compelling an argument to wait. Every decision she made balanced the fate of innumerable lives. That was what it meant to be a judge of the Abaddon court. The Vroshir were coming for Sector 11, which included the strategically significant worlds of Cradle and Asylum. Strangely enough, Asylum was probably safe for the moment. Othkimeth, the fiend inside the Mad King, did not appreciate rivals. But after the rest of the sector was destroyed, the corruption would no doubt break open that prison sooner rather than later. It would be a disaster for the Abaddon. She could use that looming threat as a card. In addition, Cradle was the birthplace of the Abaddon. The first generation Court of 7 had ascended from that world. She had tried to use that as a lever for negotiation already. None of the current generation of judges came from Cradle, and while they agreed it was a tragedy, the history of Cradle was already thoroughly represented in their archives. They would build it a lovely memorial. Those were reasons why the sector might be important to the Abaddon, and strategic reasons why the Vroshir had gone to such lengths to surround it. How important was it to her? She thought of the worlds in the sector, Asylum, Amalgam, Cradle. She thought of Wei Shi Linden and of Osriel. She had always known she would see Linden die someday, had expected it, in fact. And while Osriel had left memories all over that iteration, he hated the place. He might have even seen the outcome of the world's destruction and allowed it, though she couldn't imagine him allowing the rest of the devastation the Vroshir had brought.
There is no reason to extend myself for this sector, Suriel said aloud.
It was lost. She'd made her peace with that. Or she should have.
No compelling one, her presence agreed. But I want to.
It was irresponsible, given the scope of her responsibilities, and far too small in scale. When the entire city burned around you, why try to save one house? Then again, why not try? The city was already burning. Her presence gave her a sigh.
Then go to the sector yourself.
They had modeled that, and she couldn't stop the Vroshir advance. Not that she needed a model. The Mad King had torn through Cyril and Machiel together. She alone wouldn't even slow him down.
Sector 11 is not enough of a strategic asset to mobilize the Court of Seven, her presence said. But Cyril is.
Cyril's armor flowed around her, and runes spun in her eyes. She looked into fate. Could Machiel see what she was about to do? Under normal circumstances, he would have seen the possibility years ago. Now he was watching futures other than hers, and chaos muddied the entire weave of fate. But her decision had shifted threads of causality. Machiel was already starting to trace them back, looking for the cause. Before he could find it, Cyril summoned her razor and entered the way. She let the flows of pure order carry her between worlds, guided by her intentions. It took time to complete the journey, but she spent it gazing into the future and preparing. When she arrived, she didn't emerge right away. She sat inside the way and looked into the sector. As always, the space between worlds looked like a tunnel of textured blue, like a cross between light and cloth, but also indescribable in physical terms. But with her understanding of the way, she could see tunnels branching off, splitting in different directions. She hovered outside Sector 11, catching glimpses of its iterations. There, down that tunnel, was Amalgam, a standard, almost barren world with tinier balls of color and potential clinging to it like fuzzy moons caught in its orbit, what the locals called territories. Up another sloping tunnel, she saw Asylum. This one was sealed off, and she could see the disks of elaborate script formations set up by a previous generation's Gadrael. The scripts were fragmented and flickering, on the verge of failure, but they had been that way for decades. Beneath the seals, the world itself was smoky gray, locked against intrusion from the outside. Through that barrier of gray, she could dimly see unspeakable shapes squirming, pushing against the restrictions of their prison. Fiends of chaos, each powerful enough to contend with judges, trapped there by the collective will of ordinary humans. She looked to each of the other worlds in the sector, some more notable than others. Then, finally, she looked to Cradle. It should have been closer to her than any other iteration, but the way grew thin and gray as it approached Cradle, the Vroshir influence. If she tried to enter that iteration, she would be shunted off to the side, most likely into another sector. But even obscured, Cradle shone like a star. She could see the powers that made it up, swirling, the powerful, but still mortal, fates that clashed inside.
Warning, intrusion detected.
Her presence drew her attention up until she looked into the neighboring Sector 21. The Mad King's burning eyes met her own. Around him, blue light crumbled and twisted, the rules and laws of the universe breaking around him. He wouldn't enter the way physically for her. No fisherman dove into the ocean to wrestle a shark. The Vroshir reached out with one bone-gauntleted hand, and that hand clawed for her in the way, larger than her entire body. Its weight distorted the swirling world of order, bringing with it the crackling darkness of the void. Cyril's razor erupted into its true form, from a meter-long bar of blue steel to a branching tree that sparked with light. It was the ultimate tool for cutting away corruption, and she cut at the Mad King's attack, severing it from existence.
Warning, multiple intrusions detected.
Her enemy wasn't alone. A chain of shining stars crashed into the way to wrap around her, a constellation brought to life. From another direction came a thousand hands of blood. From yet another, a wisp of the same dark, corrosive smoke that Gadrael had faced. She cleansed or severed each one, catching glimpses of the Vroshir on the other side as she did so. A spear crashed down on her like a meteor striking a planet, and she met it with her razor. Outside the way, that would have been a deadly attack. Here, she could meet it, but it took all her focus. And more of the Vroshir were drawn to this spot. They swarmed around her, and the way dimmed. Thread by thread, it unraveled around her, revealing endless darkness specked with distant, swirling balls of color. The void. Enemies surrounded her, all attacking, and as they struck, she slipped from one side of existence to the other.
At least it's working, she thought.
Then the Mad King reached out again. This time she had to bring the full force of her power to bear against the grasping hand, and the clash of forces stretched the way even further. The chain of stars wrapped around her midsection, and she couldn't spare the attention to stop it. Bloody hands landed on her leg, and a wisp of smoke twisted around her neck. Her armor began to crack.
"Arrival incoming," her presence said.
A flaming sword burst through the Mad King's hand. A woman carved through the Vroshir's attack with her sword, her mantle boiling behind her like wings of white fire. Even her hair was crimson flame, and she severed the other attacks, binding Cyriel with one more sweep of her blade. Raziel, the wolf, turned to face Cyriel with a furious expression.
"I should have let you die."
Threads of blue light slipped back in as the way recovered some of its hold. A shimmering orange diamond appeared over Raziel's shoulder, sparkling with a different reflected face in each facet.
"My host is relieved she arrived in time," Raziel's presence said.
A string of twisting symbols punched through the way again, and Cyriel glimpsed a group of Silver Lords chanting in tandem. The silver crowns on their heads shone, and serpentine runes twined around them as they called on the energy systems of plundered worlds to make their attack. That working would be enough to rewrite the physics of any local iteration, but Raziel backhanded the ribbon of symbols with an armored fist. The working of the Silver Lords shattered. Raziel glared at her presence.
"Plot our retreat!"
"We don't have a retreat," the crystalline presence said to Cyriel. "She knows that."
Void beasts clawed their way into being, indescribable horrors slashing their way through more strands of order, drawing them closer to the void.
"Stop talking and help me."
"She's happy to be here."
The Mad King let the scythe drift off to one side and drew his sword, a length of bone that screamed with the sorrow of a thousand butchered worlds. Cyriel's instincts and presence screamed danger, and she turned her attention to the attacks of the other Vroshir as the wolf faced down the Mad King. Another figure marched into the fading blue light, holding his molten shield ready. The Titan blocked the oncoming void beasts, slapping them back out of reality.
"You will stand trial for this," Gadriel warned Cyriel. "But for now," he set his shield and faced the Mad King, "nothing will touch you."
The blue light shone brighter, but only for a moment. Daruman's red sun eyes blazed as he spoke one word.
"Come,"
the Mad King commanded, and he was echoed by his fiend. Their words spread through the void, echoing among the empty chambers of chaos, and those who dwelled in chaos obeyed. The world darkened, and once again the hold of the way began to slip. Even with three judges present, the forces of the void were too strong. Their gravity tugged the Abaddon away. Just when the way had faded to one thin, azure thread, a girl's head popped out. She looked like she was about 20, and she glanced around with uncertain eyes.
"Quick, let's go!"
Someone else shoved her from behind, a distinguished gentleman whose glasses gleamed. As the girl tumbled out of her tunnel and emerged next to Cyriel, he stepped out elegantly, and he even had his weapon in the form of a cane.
"I suppose you're going to insist on making me work, aren't you?"
said the spider, gesturing with his cane. The fox, Zakariel, trembled and hid behind him.
"This is not my doing," Machiel said.
The hound manifested in full battle armor, holding his broad two-handed sword in one hand. He looked completely unharmed, with his dark and weathered skin and his iron-gray hair, but Cyriel could see that his existence was still weak. He gave Cyriel a hard look.
"But if we are to walk this path, we will walk it together, all of us."
The ghost blew hair away from her face, and Cyriel realized for the first time the woman was standing at her side. Durandiel was the only one of the seven not wearing armor, instead wearing a dull gray dress that hazed into smoke, and carrying a tall staff.
"We're all going to die,"
the ghost said. Machiel's presence, a floating purple eye, answered her,
We have not seen our deaths.
I didn't mean here,
Durandiel sighed.
I just thought it was worth contemplating our own mortality.
The fox tried to slip out through the strengthening way, but Raziel caught her.
Where are you going, Zack?
The young-looking girl squirmed in the grip of the wolf.
Don't call me that! Call me Sarakiel!
Raziel glared.
That's not your name. At least don't call me Zack.
Talariel sighed and adjusted his glasses.
This is beneath us all, the spider said.
The attacks had stopped, and the way was back in full force, now rippling with strength as the presence of the Abaddon judges reinforced order in the cosmos. The Silver Lords and Roshir backed away as they tore open portals into the void. From twisting in Raziel's grip, the fox froze. Zakariel's head snapped in the direction of the opening portals.
Now, where are you going?
The void portals winked out instantly. Some Silver Lords in the process of fleeing were spat back into their iterations. Zakariel disappeared from the wolf's hands, and she flickered through existence. A white-armored hand clapped onto the shoulder of the Vroshir. All the Vroshir, save the Mad King. All at once. Each Silver Lord had a tiny judge standing behind them, one hand on their shoulder, a wicked fox's grin on her face. Her teeth gleamed even in no light. Gadriel braced his shield.
I can't cover all her bodies and the king, Durandiel.
I know,
the ghost said. She blew another strand of hair out of her eyes, and Cyril had a half a mind to just cut it off. Each Silver Lord's reaction was different, but each one had once been a champion of their respective worlds. They responded with lethal force, erupting with workings of every description. Durandiel tapped her staff lightly on empty space, and everything rippled. The workings vanished, and the fox struck. Blood sprayed across many realities. The Mad King kept his gaze focused on Machiel, and now the Vroshir held his sword in one hand and the scythe in the other. His voice was a spear penetrating the way.
You make quite a show with the heavens to shield you.
The judges looked down on the Mad King, and their wills were as one. Together, they slipped into reality. Iteration 119, Fathom. A moment before, this world had trembled under the power of the Mad King. A soldier arrived with his purple-veined sword, and fate returned to its proper course, Machiel, the Hound. A guardian appeared, steadied behind his shield, and the surviving mortal population shook with relief as they sensed they were protected. Gadriel, the Titan. A gentleman stepped out, cane tapping at every step, and the shroud of chaos retreated, restoring the definition of order. Talariel, the Spider. A woman drifted in, gray dress and black hair blowing like smoke, and perhaps she had always been there. Something shifted in the inner machinery of the world, but none in Iteration 119 knew exactly what. Durandiel, the Ghost. A warrior strode forward, ready for combat with sword blazing as bright as her hair, and all existence shone more brightly. Raziel, the Wolf. A healer descended on light like blue wings, and all over this reality wounds knitted back together and fortress walls reassembled themselves. Cyril, the Phoenix. A predator slunk behind the other six, and she tossed the still bleeding head of a Silver Lord behind her as void portals closed and space stilled all throughout Fathom. Zakario, the Fox. For the first time in centuries, the Court of Seven manifested together, and the world was healed. One by one, they met the burning red eyes of the Mad King. He hovered between them and the central planet of the iteration, stained bone sword in one hand and dark scythe in the other. His helmet of yellowed bone kept his face in a shadow impenetrable even to their light, and a mantle of hide ran from his shoulders to match their mantles of white flame. He took not a step back, and his will was firm. He raised his sword to his face in a salute.
Your courage does you credit,
the fallen hero said to the entire Abaddon court. From the darkness between the stars of Fathom, fiends slithered forward. Blue flashes appeared in the darkness all over as Silverlords pressed against the outside of the world. They couldn't enter, with the Fox and the Titan both inside, but still they remained on the border, waiting. A host of their kind were inside already. Silverlords floated up behind the Mad King, outnumbering the 7 judges many times over. Machiel looked over them coldly.
Surrender.
Some Silverlords, those who had served a term in Haven before, shivered. Their wills shook. Even many of the fiends cringed back like dogs remembering a whip. But the Mad King did not tremble.
I sought to strike you a blow. Never did I imagine that I could topple the pillars of heaven.
The scythe ignited in raging darkness.
With my own hands.
In a world called Fathom, between the Way and the Void, war erupted. Chapter 15. Zeal spoke through gritted teeth.
Why is there a monarch down here?
Same reason we are, Yeren said grimly.
I know why. That question was for the heavens.
Linden wrenched open the Dawn Sky Palace.
Orthos, Blue!
Little Blue whistled nervously and clung to Orthos's back. The turtle glared up at Linden.
If we can fight against the Titan, we can...
He hesitated. Linden checked the performance of his right arm while waiting for Orthos to come to the right conclusion.
Be safe, Orthos grumbled.
He carried Blue inside. Before Linden let the portal close, he looked to Mercy. She was limbering up her shoulders and wheeling her staff around. She gave him a forced smile.
Don't worry. He's weaker. I can feel it. My mother would squish him with one thumb if she were here.
Linden turned to Zeal.
How about you? Can you keep up?
No,
Zeal said. He hefted his hammer.
But I won't get in the way.
That was good enough for Linden. He let the Dawn Sky Palace close and opened his other key. Not only could he feel the strain this time, but he could feel the invisible mechanisms of authority inside the key stretching and warping. If he did this too many more times, he was going to break it. Yeren had reached into her own key and withdrawn her heart's gem. She rolled the ruby of congealed blood onto the floor, where it began exuding billowing clouds of blood aura. The blood was steadily eaten away by the hunger, but it would fuel her techniques. Swords spread out from her as well, scattered around the floor. They were practically drowned out by the heart's gem and the hunger, but they helped. She stood defiantly in the center of the room. Her sword, robes, and most of her hair were black. Her eyes, gold signs, and one lock of her hair shone red. Yeren was ready, and she wasn't hiding. Mercy had webbed herself to the far corner of the ceiling, bow ready. The dragon head at the center of the bow glared amethyst beams, and she bit her lip in concentration as she held an arrow half-forged. Beneath her, Zeal was forging ring after ring around his hammer and each of his limbs. He must have been exerting himself, and the tips of his horns glowed as green as his madra, but his face was as blank as ever. The gray cloak on his back billowed with force. Athan stood next to Yeren in fine pink and blue silks. He looked disturbed. His usual smile was missing, as it had been for most of the time they'd spent in this room, and he smoothed his short hair down, though it didn't need it. He looked agitated, which might have made sense in the situation, but it didn't match what Linden knew of Athan. The man should have greeted even certain death with a grin and a joke. Linden controlled the aura generated by the natural treasures in his void key to send weapons floating out. Wave Dancer wouldn't help much, since flying swords operated on ambient aura, but he had plenty of other constructs available. As the balls of forged madra flew, crawled, or rolled out seemingly of their own accord, Linden steadied his own breathing and looked to Athan.
Are our odds that bad?
He asked quietly.
Yes,
Dross said. But Linden hadn't been talking to him.
I may be making it look worse than it is, Athan said.
I was already in quite a mood.
Good.
Linden strapped three launcher constructs to his left arm. Let's take it out on him.
Spiritual pressure rippled out over the entire room, shaking the surface of Linden's construct. He felt Regan Shen's will, and Mercy was certainly right. This wasn't a monarch at full power. He must have spent months in the suppression field, and the power of hunger would have taken bites out of him. In a way, that was more terrifying, because his will settled on them like the tide as Regan Shen strode out of the shadows. He looked like he'd spent a year living in the desert. The white gold mane of his hair and beard was matted and overgrown, and his clothes were ragged and patched. He had cases, bottles, and containers of every description belted all over him. A pair of swords hung at his hips, one huge and shining orange, and one thin as a needle. A shield had been slung over his back, and a lens covered Shen's left eye. And in his eyes was all the confidence of a monarch. He didn't look like someone who had survived the wilderness. He looked like the wilderness had survived him.
Aethon, it seems I owe Subject One some thanks. I could use an Aurelius guide.
He glanced up to the symbol on the wall.
Especially here.
At some point, Aethon had recovered his smile.
I'm flattered. I didn't think you'd trust me, given my track record at guiding monarchs.
I was talking about your remnant.
I have a suspicion he wouldn't be any more pleasant to deal with.
I'll find out for myself.
Regan Shen looked to Yeren and nodded.
Uncrowned queen, your performance was magnificent, and Red Faith is quite taken with your methods. I'd be more than willing to work with you.
Yeren shrugged.
No blood spilled between us. You want to get friendly? It depends on what you want to do with the Dread Guards.
Linden, Zeal, Mercy, and Aethon were now spread out to flank the monarch as Yeren stood boldly in front of him. Regan Shen didn't seem to mind their positioning at all. He openly examined Yeren with a sudden interest.
I think we might be able to work together. I intend to finally bring the Dread Guards under control.
You'd bet that you can.
I'm betting everything.
Gleaming red chrome Madra slowly expanded from Yeren, and her sword lifted to point at him.
Love to test the edge of somebody who can hold a Dread Guard's leash.
Yes, it will be your honor.
Regan Shen surveyed the rest of them with disdain.
Well, if you're going to attack, let's see it.
Linden wasn't so rude as to turn down an invitation like that. The three launcher constructs on his arm fired in a set sequence. First, the Web of Silence, a shimmering purple and orange web from a strange path that attacked the mind and the spirit. Then, a Starkeeper's Lance, from a path that compressed sword and lightning Madra to the utmost. Finally, the Swamp Fire, a swarm of knuckle-sized, poisonous fireballs. In a blink, all three constructs had launched, timed to land at their target together. From his other hand, Linden unleashed a bar of black dragon's breath. The others had struck at the same time. Mercy, who once again felt like an overlady, had released a barrage of 1,000 forged amethyst arrows, the binding of Eclipse, sacred bow of the Soul Seeker. Instead of swinging his hammer, as Linden had expected, Zeal also used a simple launcher construct. It looked like a wasp's stinger, and it sent out a series of nails made from force madra. Three people didn't move: Regan Shen, Yeren, and Aethon. A web spread out to devour Regan Shen, glistening orange and purple. Behind it, a needle-sharp beam crackling with lightning and a spray of green fireballs. Linden hadn't skimped on these weapons. All of them had been enhanced to the level of Archlord constructs. Meanwhile, a dark beam of black flame tore through the air to the side. Gold and gray bolts flew from another angle, strong enough to drive holes through thick city walls. And from above, Mercy's amethyst bolts. Regan Shen faced techniques from every angle. A transparent bubble expanded from the shield on the monarch's back. All the techniques shattered when they struck the bubble, but Linden could feel the impact they carried. The construct couldn't hold out, and sure enough, the shield itself broke. That was what Yeren and Aethon had been waiting for. Yeren shone white and appeared behind Regan Shen, her sword shining. Aethon stood where she had before, and he drove a hollow spear at the monarch's midsection. It was so advanced that it actually took on the image of a spear, the triangular head plunging straight for Shen's core. He twisted, slamming the back of his fist onto Yeren's sword as he swung a kick at Aethon's head. The force from that simple, mortal movement was hard for even Lyndon to comprehend. It was like the monarch had a dread god sealed inside his body. Just one punch and a kick sent a storm howling through the labyrinth. Aethon ducked back, avoiding the kick, but Yeren's sword met his fist head-on. Madra from the collision exploded, tearing the air again, and Lyndon felt the world itself ripple. The hollow spear scraped past Shen's middle, vanishing into the wall. Zeal's hammer came in a moment later, driven by five layers of forged script. He swung with his whole body, and while he still hadn't fully recovered, Lyndon felt the strength of an archlord from him at that moment. Regan Shen still hadn't regained his stance, but he still twisted in midair and stopped the hammer with a palm, which was when Lyndon, blazing with the burning cloak, arrived at his other side. He threw a punch at the back of Shen's head, and the monarch spoke. "Stop," Regan Shen commanded. But Lyndon had felt his authority gathering and met it with his own. Their words overlapped.
"No!"
Pain spiked through his head as his will clashed directly with the monarch's. It almost worked. Lyndon's fist hesitated for an instant before continuing, but it was enough for Shen to twist out of the way again. Then Lyndon found himself taking a step back again as Regan Shen fought fist to fist with Aethon, Zeal, and Yeren. Every clash between him and Yeren shook the room, but she couldn't make him take a step back. He didn't ignore Zeal's attacks, but he treated them dismissively anyway, and Aethon... Lyndon found that strange. The fight had only continued for a breath, but Shen had made sure to dodge all Aethon's attacks. Spiritual attacks, Lyndon realized.
Agreed. I've sorted the appropriate constructs.
Lyndon switched to his pure core as Dross linked him to several constructs. A second later, and Lyndon joined the fight again. A sword of forged cyan madra appeared in his hand, and he swiped at Regan Shen, who dodged at the last second. Lyndon followed up with an empty palm, and Shen was forced to face him for the first time. That gave Aethon and Yeren an opening, and Yeren began forging her netherclaw technique as Aethon dropped stars of pure madra that speared down from the sky. Regan Shen blurred as he leaped, cracking even the protected stone of the labyrinth. He created distance, but Mercy had already webbed the top half of the room in soulfire-enhanced strings of shadow. As he broke through, a sphere of shadow expanded around him, the dream of darkness. His mind and spirit would be protected from such things, but it should slow him down for a moment. No one needed a reminder. Lyndon raised both his hands and filled the space with Black Dragon's breath. Aethon launched a hollow spear, Yeren slashed with netherclaw, and Zeal accelerated his hammer through several rings of script so that it cracked like thunder as it plunged into the shadows.
Danger!
Dross called to everyone, and Lyndon switched back to his pure core. The hollow domain erupted from him just in time. A slash of orange light split the room in half like a sunrise, dissipating the dream of darkness. Regan Shen hovered in midair, despite the lack of aura in the room, a misshapen orange sword blazing in his hand. It gave off an overwhelming pressure no less than Shen's own. A chill ran down Lyndon's spine as he felt Dross's alarm focus on spider-thin cracks that slowly vanished in front of Regan Shen. He had, however temporarily, cut through the world itself.
"I've kept you company long enough," the monarch said. "I don't like to work so hard."
A green feather emerged from a case at his side, and suddenly the room was filled with wind aura. None of them waited for him to do as he wished. Striker techniques speared toward him, but slashes of orange light flickered out and struck them down, though his sword didn't seem to move. A moment later, nine tridents appeared, shining green with death madra that reminded Lyndon of the tomb hydras. They hovered in the wind aura, and Lyndon's heart sank. The soul cloak bloomed around him. Even by a monarch's standards, these were no ordinary weapons. They had a powerful will to destroy that resonated with the aura all throughout the labyrinth. These tridents were hungry, and one flashed at each of Shen's enemies. Dross slowed the world down, and Lyndon extended his left hand to the trident spearing toward Mercy. He could feel the will compelling the trident to seek life, and rather than oppose it, he redirected it.
"To me," Lyndon ordered.
The trident swerved and headed to Lyndon, but it wasn't as fast as the one that was already about to reach him. This one, Lyndon reached up and caught with his right hand. Ordinarily, that would have been a fool's move. The soul cloak gave him the speed and precision to catch it, but he shouldn't be strong enough to hold back such a weapon. The strength he'd gained from draining Crusher stayed with him, and now he was strong enough, physically. But Death Madra seeped into him, eroding his life from the inside. It was trying to consume him. So Lyndon consumed it right back. The power of the trident soaked into Lyndon, and he saw a few flickering images, pieces of the weapon's will. It didn't have memories, exactly, not like a living being did, but he pieced together something of an understanding. These weren't nine weapons made to work together. This was one weapon, and it had one intention. Nine fangs flashing together. And it wasn't happy about having its energy stolen. The second trident arrived as the first started struggling to pull back, but Lyndon had a firm grip on it. He swung the first trident into the second.
"It will try to dodge, but it is not a true intelligence, just a naturally formed will, but it is a very good thing that all nine are not focused on you."
Sure enough, the trident tried to dodge, but it couldn't keep up with Lyndon enhanced by the soul cloak. He knocked the second trident out of the air and vented the Death Madra into the air. All the while, he watched and thought. Mercy had used her freedom from the trident to focus attacks on Regan Shen. Zeal had matched against his trident, Aethon had blasted it from the air and kept his attention focused on the enemy, and Yeren hadn't even been slowed down by hers. Why hadn't Regan Shen focused all the tridents? He had kept four back to defend himself, which was certainly more than he needed. If he had sent them all at one person, he would have been able to keep them out of the fight.
"It looks as though he's trying to preserve your lives," Dross suggested.
"Or the tridents," Lyndon responded.
And that hunch felt right. Regan Shen would not waste his prized collection. With renewed vigor, Lyndon adjusted his grip on the death trident and consumed again. The Madra channels running into his arms strained, and he could feel the binding warping under the flow of powerful energy, but he kept it up. The trident he'd knocked away turned back to him, and Regan Shen shot him a look of annoyance. One of the tridents defending him from Yeren's attacks peeled away and shot toward Lyndon, leaving Lyndon fighting three. Lyndon's thrill at having his theory proved right was accompanied by an equal sense of crisis. If Regan Shen was fighting them while trying to avoid damaging his weapons, that meant he wasn't taking them seriously. And the moment he did, they were going to die. Lyndon was overwhelmed for a moment, and only with Dross's help did he manage to keep the three tridents off him. Even Mercy shot one down as it was about to hit him, and he focused Soulfire and Black Flame Madra into the most condensed Black Dragon's Breath he could make. With that, he sliced a trident in half. Yeren and Regan Shen were clashing in the middle of a visible thunderclap that distorted space, but Lyndon still caught the monarch's grimace. All eight of the remaining tridents flew back to Regan Shen, almost impaling Yeren until she dodged.
"Enough of this," Regan Shen said.
The tridents vanished.
"Engrave this memory into your remnants, for you are privileged to witness the path of the King's Key."
Gold-edged portals swirled open behind him. Five of them, one for each opponent. Techniques emerged from the portals like serpents leaping from the ocean, and these were not the limited techniques that had been eroded by hunger aura. These were true monarch techniques, and they blinded Lyndon's senses.
"Processing!"
Dross cried. The scene seemed to freeze, as it often had before. That gave Lyndon plenty of time to see what effects Regan Shen had summoned from the weapons hidden in his void space. One was a forged hand, seemingly made of jade streaked with gold. The Madra was so dense that it seemed physical, but Lyndon could feel that it was dense energy of life and earth. The hand was reaching out for zeal, and it was going to flatten him. An orange-white line blasted out of another portal. This was Red Dragon's Breath, focused to such a degree that Lyndon could scarcely believe it.
It must have been a launcher construct made from a red dragon herald, and it shot for Aethon. Ocean blue tides gushed out of a third portal with enough pressure that the water itself could crush stone. Inside the depths were glowing, flickering, humanoid figures. This was a mysterious water technique headed for Yeren, and it brought an energy of suppression that struck at the soul as well as the body. A flurry of silver bat-like techniques rushed after Mercy, carrying sword energy complex enough that Linden couldn't quite identify its makeup. They were possessed by a furious will, like a swarm of bloodthirsty bees, and their very presence shook his senses until he felt like he was going to bleed from the ears. This was a technique meant to shred heralds. Mercy wouldn't last a second. A massive sword, so detailed that its blade gleamed in the light, speared toward Linden, but he paid it no mind. It was made from dream madra forged solid, and it reminded Linden that Regan Shen didn't know about dross. Between pure madra and dross's support, Linden should be able to crack that sword like it was made from cheap porcelain, but the others were in danger. Dross, what can we do about the technique targeting Yeren?
Inconclusive.
Do we have enough time to block for Mercy with a hollow domain?
Inconclusive.
This time, Linden caught a hint of desperation from Dross's voice. That was fair, as Linden was feeling not a little desperation himself.
What can you tell me?
If we do not intervene, at least three of our allies will likely suffer life-threatening injuries, and I cannot hold on for much longer.
His hold on Linden's perceptions was beginning to slip. The dream madra was thin here, and Dross was still weak. Linden looked desperately from one of his friends to the other. He could throw himself in front of Mercy, but then he wouldn't be able to reach Yeren. And what about Zeal? With the pure cloak, can I make it to Mercy first and then get to Yeren?
It depends on the exact strength of the techniques and how long Yeren can hold on. Most likely, yes, but that leaves Zeal.
Aethon's closest to him. Tell him to cover Zeal. Linden had to assume Aethon had another trick tucked up his sleeve.
That will be the last significant action I can take.
Do it!
The world slipped back into motion, and so did Linden. He dashed in front of Mercy, the hollow domain erupting around him. The world was filled with blue-white madra. The techniques Mercy was using to defend herself were cancelled, and her purple eyes widened in panic as the strings of shadow lashing her to the ceiling were wiped away. The bladed silver bats were not. They were so dense and so much stronger than Linden that they dove into the hollow domain and continued flitting for Mercy. While they weren't destroyed, they were weakened. Linden slammed an empty palm against them, focusing his will and his soul fire on the technique. A forged palm bigger than his body smashed into the fluttering blades, and they crashed into it like a wall. But each one pounded against his spirit, and he felt like a window pelted by hail. Each strike left him cracked. That was when the dream sword arrived. It wasn't as dense as the spirits of Sword Madra, so it was weakened more by the hollow domain, but still not enough. It plunged into Linden's mind, and his concentration was disrupted as it struck. The hollow domain flickered. Dross pitted himself against the technique, but he was weaker than he had calculated. It took too long. In the absence of the domain, the remaining bladed bats flew around Linden toward their intended target. Mercy called up her bloodline armor as she fell, and it formed before the domain returned. Even so, they cut straight through her armor. Mercy's blood sprayed the floor from a dozen wounds, and she screamed. Dross finally broke the sword, and instead of rushing toward Yeren, Linden had to fall toward Mercy. Concentrated pure madra broke the technique, but Mercy's bloodline armor had already shattered. She bled from too many wounds, including one to the neck. Linden pressed down on it, pulling out the healing construct he'd withdrawn earlier. A pulsing sac of blood and life madra attached to her wound, feeding her healing energy, and her breathing steadied. With dread in his heart, Linden looked up to Yeren. She was pinned to the wall by a rush of dense water madra, and he saw flickers of red as she battled with the glowing white silhouettes in the depths. He felt her holding her own, and he was encouraged. Then Regan Shen lazily raised his sword in her direction. Linden's world focused to a single point.
Stop!
Regan Shen froze. He snorted and tugged his arm against Linden's will as though pulling against stubborn cobwebs.
Pain stabbed through Linden's head, and his working broke, but he blinked past tears in his eyes to see that it did have some effect. Rhaegon Shen had turned his sword toward Linden instead.
"I cannot go further,"
Dross said, but there was a little more emotion in his words now. He sounded ashamed.
"I am too weak."
"Me too,"
Linden thought. But Linden raised his arm and gathered his madra. He would try to consume some of the power in the attack Rhaegon Shen was about to use. If it had worked to weaken the Titan's attack, maybe it would work here. As he activated the technique in his arm, he felt a soul-piercing snap. The binding fell apart, and his arm fell to his side, inert. The glowing sword cracked the void as Rhaegon Shen swung it down, sending spatial cracks to every side like a spider web. A slash of orange light rushed for Linden, and when he felt it, he realized his consume technique would have done nothing anyway. Linden still didn't give up. He stood over Mercy's body and radiated the hollow domain. If he weakened it enough, then maybe... Aethon appeared in front of them. Ghostly blue-white armor shimmered over every inch of his body, as though he wore a remnant over his skin. Archlord's soulfire rippled through him for a second, like quicksilver. Then he was striking forward with a forged spear. His will and technique crashed against Rhaegon Shen's. Deep black cracks spiraled through the air as the world began to break. Orange Madra dispersed into essence, Aethon's spear broke, and the cracks healed. A smile tugged at one side of Rhaegon Shen's mouth.
"You've worked so hard to stand before me. I'm almost proud."
"That's not what I was working for," Aethon said. "But I admit, it is a perk."
Linden felt something. Aethon had reached beyond himself for that attack. His will was dense and far-reaching. He had tapped into something bigger than himself. An image began to form at the ceiling, something more real than a working of dream and light. Linden began to see a shaft of polished wood projected from beyond reality. Then Aethon gestured, and the image cut off. Rhaegon Shen's head jerked back, and he looked truly shocked.
"What are you thinking?"
Aethon pointed another spear of pure Madra.
"You are not my goal. You're just in my way."
"Very well."
The monarch lightly twirled the sword in his hand, and another golden portal appeared behind him.
"Die, then."
And the battle between Aethon and Rhaegon Shen began. Chapter 16. Aethon's spear grew as it flashed across the room, and Linden saw that he had projected the hollow spear technique from his scissors. It was a perfect blend of sacred instrument and striker technique, carrying the power of both. But it was only enough to match the orange energy that Shen projected from his own sword. The entire room shook, spiritually and physically, and Linden was painfully aware of how little Madra he had remaining. Compared to his normal state, at least. Compared to the others, he was in great shape. Zeal moved weakly against the wall, half his body burned. His clothes had been singed away. Linden hadn't seen what had happened to him, but obviously Aethon hadn't been able to save him completely. Linden carried the still-healing Mercy away. She mumbled at him that she would be fine, and she would, thanks to the healing construct on her neck, but he needed to move her away from the battle. Aethon called a rain of stars down on Rhaegon Shen, and Shen responded by swallowing them all into a portal he opened over his own head. This time, Linden noticed that the portals were actually sticking just like the void keys had been. Shen had to spare the willpower to force open his own void space. That had to be a weakness they could exploit. But another worry overcame him first. Yaren. She was still inside the water technique. Every clash between Aethon and Shen shook the surging mass of water that imprisoned Yaren, and every now and again her madra speared out, but her spirit was still flashing inside. She was battling against the spirits inside the technique, and she was weakening. Linden sprinted around the wall of the chamber. His pure core had less than a third remaining, and his soul fire was a dim candle, but he had to help.
"Dross, what do you have left?"
"Not what I should, and that disturbs me. Northstrider once used me to develop a combat report against Rhaegon Shen."
Linden's hopes soared.
But I am too fractured, Dross continued. I can piece together so little of it. Too little.
Linden's heart crashed back down. Let me know if you remember anything. In the meantime, tell Yeren I'm on my way. As Regan Shen hurled Aethon across the chamber, and Aethon retaliated with a slash of suddenly huge scissors, Linden dove into the side of a raging river like a waterfall suspended in midair. Suddenly, he could feel the pressure of the technique firsthand. He'd been able to sense it from across the chamber, but this was like the weight of the ocean crushing him from every direction. It was a churning maelstrom of water madra on at least the herald level, and every drop bore the will to destroy him. A ghost of soft white light drifted up to him, extending hands out to him as though in peace. The spirit's smile was a black crescent in its face. Linden met it with the empty palm. On a human being, the empty palm washed their madra channels clean, temporarily robbing them of control over their own spirit. On a spirit, it blasted away the very material of their body. The spirit dissolved, but its smile only widened. From the darkness of the chaotic water, two more spirits came for him. They darted in when he wasn't looking, then flitted away when he turned toward them. They were afraid of his pure madra, and Linden couldn't tell if it was an instinctive aversion or if they'd learned from what happened to the first. Linden extended his perception, searching for Yeren, but he found his senses choked off. He felt as though he were adrift in the center of an endless ocean with no surface, and it was only him and these eerie, malicious spirits. He began cycling for the hollow domain, but Dross stopped him.
This environment is already filled with madra denser than your own. The most you could do is weaken it for a moment, and then your domain would collapse.
Then I'll have to try something else.
Surrounded by water, Linden switched to his black flame core. It wasn't ideal, of course, but the path of black flame was destruction as much as it was heat, and he had more black flame madra left than pure. Linden controlled finger-thin beams of dragon's breath, fully aware that Yeren might be nearby. He sliced both spirits in half. They reformed instantly, still grinning. Four hands extended to embrace his head, and he felt an overwhelming sense of peace. Foreign will pressed in against him, urging him to relax and allow them in. Strangely enough, the technique reminded him about Bai-Ro, although the Skysworn's techniques had always felt repulsive. But such a vague temptation had no sway over Linden. The spirits were close now, closer than they would have gotten if he had kept cycling pure madra. So they had fallen for his trap. Black flame retreated, replaced by pure madra, and his eyes turned blue. They turned to swim away, but it was too late. An empty palm caught one, then the soul cloak propelled him after the second. He dispersed that spirit too. And in the instant he projected the hollow domain, it lifted the veil the water kept over his senses. He felt Yeren. He swam in that direction and encountered her in seconds. She was surrounded by spirits, slicing them apart as quickly as they regenerated, but they had no physical bodies. A huge spirit, obviously the leader of the White Shadows, loomed over her. Linden had seen many strange remnants, but this one resembled something like a soft centipede with human hands instead of legs. He hated it on sight, especially as it curled around Yeren and tried to entrap her. Her eyes fluttered under the psychic attack, and her movements became more sluggish. Linden didn't know how she'd held out so long. But she didn't have to last much longer. The centipede's head swirled around, and Linden saw it, too, was disturbingly human. It grinned a black grin. Then Linden put his remaining soul fire into an empty palm and blasted the head off its shoulders. Water poured everywhere as the entire technique popped like a bubble. Half of it dissolved to essence, but the ground was flooded with real water as well. Half of it had been actual liquid controlled by aura. Linden caught Yeren one-handed as they both fell, and he landed with her in his arm. She coughed and sputtered, taking a deep breath.
"Thought Harold's couldn't drown," she choked out.
Linden wanted to respond, but his attention was drawn to the battle still raging in the center of the room. Aethon and the Monarch had taken it to another level. Hollow spears flashed in a flurry as stars rained from the ceiling. A gold portal opened and released another beam of concentrated red dragon's breath, like the one that had targeted Zeal, but it broke on the Hollow King's armor. An orange slash missed Aethon and broke the stone of the labyrinth as a stab from enlarged scissors did the same to the floor. It was so fast that it was hard to follow, even for Linden, though he was sure Yeren wouldn't have a problem. But there was a dimension to the battle that only he could appreciate. Every move from each of them was a clash of wills so profound as to bend reality. While Rigon Shen used no verbal commands, each of his techniques carried enough authority to kill Aethon outright. And with sheer willpower, Aethon matched and stopped them. An image appeared over Aethon, a connection to powers beyond this world, an icon. Aethon canceled it half-formed. He peeled aside chains that Rigon Shen summoned, and another icon began to form. Aethon denied it again. Linden asked Dross, "Apologies, but am I seeing wrong?"
"No, I agree with your assessment. It appears he is denying an advancement to Sage."
"Why?" Did Aethon know what he was doing? Maybe he was feeling a foreign influence and cutting himself off for it out of instinct. But no, this was Aethon, the king of theory that even rival monarchs respected. He would know what he was doing. In which case, this must be part of his plan. Advancing to Sage had to hurt him somehow, even if that advancement would bring him advantages. But Linden could tell how this fight would end, if it continued as it was. Aethon may have deep Madra reserves, but he was facing a monarch. Linden needed to balance the playing field. His head was pounding, and he found it hard to concentrate. He had pushed himself to the brink already in this fight. He had enough experience now to understand something about how weaponizing willpower worked. He didn't have a finite amount, like Madra or Soulfire. Rather, it was more like physical strength, and that by using it, he exhausted himself. And he had already used as much of his will as he ever had. But that didn't mean he was out. He focused on Rigon Shen and waited for the right chance. If he wanted to have the most impact, he had to maximize his timing and the connection to his icon, meaning he needed to leverage his void authority to maximum effect. Linden's gaze was naturally drawn to the golden portal forming behind Rigon Shen. "Close!" Linden commanded. The portal made from the path of the King's Key led onto a void space, so it was the perfect thing for Linden to effect with his authority. But at the same time, it was Rigon Shen's personal property, and perhaps might even count as a part of his power. He had authority over it by default. But Shen was focused on Aethon. While the monarch was distracted, his portal closed. A hollow spear caught him through the gut. He roared in pain as his spirit was scored, and Linden felt the impact the spiritual damage had on his Madra. Rigon Shen's eyes flashed gold, and he tore open another portal behind him. Linden knew immediately that he had no chance of stopping this one from opening, but he had expected as much. So he did the opposite, and pushed it wider. "Open!" The portal opened easily this time, without the resistance that Shen had pushed through every other time inside the labyrinth. "Greetings from Tiberian," the monarch said. Multicolored lightning thundered out of the portal. It carried such destructive pressure that Linden knew it wasn't the end, but Aethon used everything he had to defend. The stars from the Hollow King's crown flew down to resist the lightning, hollow spears crashed against it, and he poured soulfire into everything. The many-colored thunderbolt crashed through one star, then another. It broke a bundle of spears, pushed through a river of pure Madra, and struck against the hollow armor. Aethon gritted his teeth and pushed. His scissors split the storm Madra as the attack peeled pieces of his hollow armor away one chunk at a time. Finally, Aethon wavered unsteadily on his feet. Blue-white essence faded upward as his broken armor faded, but he had survived the attack. Then a hand emerged from the portal, followed by another. The hands were made from forged Madra of the same aspect as the lightning before, storm Madra of many lesser aspects woven together. This multicolored lightning was so dense as to be tangible, and it even reminded Linden of the Nine Cloud Court's royal Madra. A man's face pushed through, and Linden could make out clear features of his face. This spirit was at least as dense as Little Blue or Ruby, with a similar level of existence.
He looked like Ethan's older brother, with short hair and a short beard, and a deeper light crackled in his eyes. When he emerged, spiritual pressure pushed down on all of them. Even Rigan Shen flinched briefly at the tension in the air. This was a monarch without months of hunger aura eroding his spirit, a true monarch's remnant. As its gaze landed on Ethan, Linden saw a golden collar encircling the remnant's throat. Runes on the gold blazed with power.
"Ethan,"
the remnant said, with a voice like buzzing lightning.
"You survived. I am sorry."
Pure grief was not an expression Linden had expected from Ethan. "Shen, was our grudge really this deep for you to do this?" Tiberian's lightning eyes turned to Rigan Shen, and he tried to duck back into the portal.
"Kill,"
Rigan Shen commanded. There was a clash of authority so intense that Linden could feel it as a weakened monarch pitted its will against the remnant of another. The collar flared, and he knew it would turn the competition in Shen's favor. This was Linden's chance. With a last of his will, he issued the same command one final time.
"Open!"
Rigan Shen's concentration was entirely focused on Tiberian's remnant, and this time the portal around Tiberian expanded more rapidly. It pushed against the labyrinth, clashing against the authority that prevented spatial transportation until Linden could hear the two forces groaning against one another. But the labyrinth's rule was endless. Rigan Shen's authority was not. With a snap, the portal structure collapsed. The lightning remnant smiled faintly as he let himself fade back into the void space. Shen tried to force the space back open, but the connection between himself and his weapons was now broken. It would take time to repair. His golden eyes blazed with rage, and though Linden felt like he would pass out at any second, he gave a smile.
"Apologies," Linden said.
The monarch was not amused. Linden only wished there were something they could do with this opportunity. Rigan Shen couldn't recover his power either, and now he was cut off from his supply of weapons. This was the most mortal they could get him, and he had to be as low on Madra and Soulfire as they were. But Ethan was just laughing weakly as he swayed on his feet, his armor still dissolving and scissors held in a trembling hand. His spirit felt like it would be extinguished by a passing breeze. Zeal had lost consciousness at some point, and the burns across the left half of his body were still smoking. Mercy was conscious and contained inside a cocoon of strings of shadow, but nothing she could do would defend her from even a casual attack of Rigan Shen's. Yeren had gathered enough strength, and she rolled away from Linden to rise up on one knee. Her arm was strong as she swung her sword up, and he was certain she could trade an attack or two with Rigan Shen, but not for long. Linden himself was down an arm. He could barely see straight after overusing his authority, and his pure core was mostly empty. His Black Flame Madra was actually in decent supply, but his Soul Fire was completely gone. He was out of cards. But Dross wasn't.
"I have made contact," Dross said at last. "Beware."
The attention of the labyrinth must have been watching them already, but now Linden felt it focus on them. On Dross. Then it swiveled to Rigan Shen. He casually swiped an orange striker technique at Yeren, who struggled against it. While she was pushing back his Madra, he looked up and shouted.
"You see, I can grant your wish," Rigan Shen roared. "Bring me to you."
Linden felt a